Roberto Clemente once said, "I want to be remembered as a ball player who gave all he had to give." As we reflect on his life and the choices he made leading to his death, it's fair to say that Clemente did just that. I'm Nina Instead, and this is Dead Ball. Roberto Clemente Walker was born August 18, 1934, in Carolina, Puerto Rico, the son of Melchor and Luisa. His father was a laborer on a sugarcane plantation, his mother a laundress. He had two older step-siblings, a brother and a sister. Roberto was athletic from a young age. In high school, he showed an aptitude for track and field, excelling in high jump and javelin. What he really wanted was to play baseball. Clemente sometimes worked for the San Juan Senators so he could get free admission to the baseball games. He was a huge fan of Senators star Monty Irvin. Irvin was a left fielder and first baseman. Roberto and his friends carried the Senators players' bags, and Irvin even gifted the young athlete with a ball and glove. Irvin and Clemente had some things in common, although it's likely they didn't know this until much later. Both excelled in track and field during their high school years, with Irvin setting a New Jersey state record for the javelin throw in the 1930s. When Clemente finished high school, he was picked up by a team in the Puerto Rican Baseball League, the Santurce Crabbers. In the fall of 1952, a Major League scout first laid eyes on Roberto Clemente. The Dodgers sent Al Campanis to Puerto Rico to check out the teams and see what he could bring back. Campanis would say that Clemente was, quote, "the best free agent athlete I've ever seen." He encouraged the Dodgers to sign him right away. They gave Campanis the go-ahead to offer Clemente a $5,000 salary and a $10,000 signing bonus. That is the 2020 equivalent of a $48,000 salary and an almost $100,000 bonus. Well, the Braves caught wind of this offer, and they approached Clemente with a significantly sweeter deal, $30,000 a year. In today's money, that's nearly $300,000 for a season. Roberto didn't know what to do. The Dodgers approached him first, but the Braves were offering significantly more money. He turned to his parents, asking for guidance. After all, Roberto was 18 years old, just a kid who loves to play the game. His mother advised him to keep his word and stay with the team that he dealt with first. Roberto signed with the Dodgers, but fate had other plans for the young athlete. In 1954, the Dodgers assigned 19-year-old Roberto to Montreal in the International League, but this put him at risk in the draft. The Pittsburgh Pirates had first pick, and they snapped up the future Hall of Famer. And I can only imagine how the Braves and the Dodgers would feel about this in years to come. The Dodgers thought they were going to pull one over on the league, hiding Clemente in Montreal. But the league caught wind of it and inserted him into the draft. You have to wonder how the Dodgers would have fared with Clemente in right field through the 1950s and 60s. In 1955, Clemente donned the Pirate uniform for the first time. According to the Heinz History Center blog, Clemente made his Major League debut on April 17, 1955, in a doubleheader against the Brooklyn Dodgers, the same Dodgers who lost Clemente in the draft months earlier. His first few games were played wearing the number 13. It wasn't until Pirates center fielder Earl Smith left the team during the 1955 season that Clemente began wearing the iconic number 21. Clemente's rookie season was cut short after he was injured in a car accident. He played in 124 games and finished the season with a .255 batting average. 1956 showed a marked improvement in Clemente. His skills, a powerful arm and remarkable speed, impressed fans and foes alike. Notably, he became the only player in the history of the game to hit a walk-off inside the park grand slam. This happened during a 9-8 victory over the Chicago Cubs on Pirates' home turf at Forbes Field. In 1958, Clemente enlisted in the Marine Corps Reserve. He served 6 months on active duty at Parris Island, South Carolina, and at Camp Lejeune in North Carolina. He remained in the reserves until 1964. Clemente would go on to be enshrined in the Marine Corps Sports Hall of Fame in 2003. And listeners, I had no idea that the Marine Corps had a Sports Hall of Fame. You learn new things every day on Deadball. Clemente really came into his own as a player during the 1960 season, his skills were turning him into a leader of the Pittsburgh team. His .312 average and team-high 94 RBIs would lead the Pirates to the World Series. In 1960, Clemente was also named to his first All-Star game. This was a first not only for Roberto, but for all Latin American players. Roberto was considered for the National League Most Valuable Player Award as well. And the 1960 All-Star Game had no shortage of Pirates on the field. In addition to Roberto Clemente, teammates Dick Groat, Bill Mazeroski, Smokey Burgess, Bob Skinner, and pitchers Vern Law, Roy Face, and Bob Friend, they all participated in the Midsummer Classic. The Pirates finished the regular season with a record of 95-59-1, 7 games in front of second-place Milwaukee to win their first National League championship in 33 seasons. The Yankees, they finished the season with a record of 97-57, winning their 25th pennant and finishing 8 games ahead of the Baltimore Orioles. The Yankees, winners of their 10th pennant in 12 years, were considered the best team in baseball and heavily favored against the upstart Pirates. In 1960, the Yankees were led by Mickey Mantle and Roger Maris. The team also included future Hall of Famers Yogi Berra and Whitey Ford. And if you look at this World Series by the numbers, it could best be described as unusual. The Yankees outhit the Pirates 91-60, outbatted them 338-256, and they hit 10 home runs to Pittsburgh's 4. Despite being outplayed, the Pirates somehow managed to split the first 6 games. This forced a 7th and decisive game that was to be played in Pittsburgh. In what has been described as one of the greatest games in World Series history, the Pirates won 10-9 on an unexpected 9th-inning walk-off home run by second baseman Bill Mazeroski. For his part, Clemente hit .310 in the series with 3 runs batted in. For Roberto, it would be the first of 2 World Series titles in his big league career. And while we talk about his numbers and statistics, I think it's important to address that Clemente faced unusual challenges for a ballplayer in the 50s and 60s. First, he struggled with a language barrier. English was not his first language, and communication issues added a layer of complexity to forming relationships with his teammates off the field. Then, he had to deal with a fan base and public relations machine that wanted him to be the less ethnic Bob Clemente. He wanted no part of that. His name was Roberto, and that's what he wanted to be addressed and known as. Looking back at his baseball cards over the years, on cards from 1957 through the 1960s, the Topps Baseball Card Company listed him as Bob Clemente. While you may be thinking, it's just a name, Roberto Clemente was breaking barriers for Latino players in the big leagues. He was the first Latino to win a World Series as a starter, the first to be named league MVP, to be a World Series MVP, and the first Latino elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame. His name and his origins as a native of Puerto Rico are important. And speaking of baseball cards, a Roberto Clemente rookie card is valued at about $40,000. In November of 1964, Roberto married Vera Zabala. According to the Roberto Clemente Foundation, they grew up in the same neighborhood at the same time, but they didn't meet until the early 1960s. They saw each other for the first time when Vera's brother was giving her a ride, and they passed Roberto in his car. She recognized the man in the car as the famous hometown hero baseball player. Later, Roberto saw Vera going into a local shop. After she left, Roberto asked the clerk who she was. Being an old-fashioned or traditional sort, Roberto approached her parents and asked permission to date her. They gave him their blessing to see one another, and the couple were married in November 1964 at the San Fernando Church in Carolina. They would go on to have three children, Roberto Jr. in 1965, Luis in 1966, and Enrique in 1969. During the off-season, Clemente returned to his native Puerto Rico, where he was known, not just for his skills on the field, but for the tireless effort he put into charitable work, which included spending time with young athletes and guiding them in the finer points of the game. His combination of sports prowess and generosity of spirit made him something of a hero in Puerto Rico. On the field, 1966 would be Clemente's strongest season. He hit .317 with 29 home runs and 119 runs batted in. He also won the Golden Glove that year and earned the coveted title of National League MVP. In 1971, Roberto became part of the first entirely non-white lineup in baseball history. It was Wednesday, September 1st, 1971, that the Pirates fielded a lineup of African-American and Latino players. They were playing against the Philadelphia Phillies in Three Rivers Stadium in Pittsburgh. There was a crowd of just over 11,000 on hand to watch as history was made. Ironically, no one set out to do anything special that night. It just worked out that way. Around the third inning, according to Sabre.org, Pirates first baseman Dave Cash remarked to shortstop Al Oliver, quote, "Hey Scoop, we've got all brothers out there." Oddly enough, the milestone didn't get much attention. Pittsburgh newspapers weren't reporting because of a strike. And in 1971, games were mainly shown locally. No cable or satellite broadcast, so it's possible no one noticed until later. When Pirates manager Danny Murtaugh was asked about that night, he said, quote, "When it comes to making out the lineup, I'm colorblind, and my athletes know it. They don't know it because I tell them. They know it because they're familiar with how I operate. The best men in our organization are the ones who are here. And the ones who are here all play, depending on when the circumstances present themselves." One of the men on the field with Clemente that night was Manny Sanguian. Sanguian, brought over from Panama in 1967 to play for the Pirates, he first met Roberto Clemente at the Miami airport. According to a story on MLB.com, Clemente, the seasoned all-star, was flying coach. Sangy, as he would come to be known, was flying first class. Clemente offered to share a cab with him when they landed, and the two soon became friends. Clemente looked after Sangy. He helped him manage his game and his finances. The MLB story states that for the flight back, he helped Sangy exchange the pricier first-class ticket for a coach seat, and the men sat side by side. Sangy came from a poor family, and it was important to him to send money home to his parents and siblings, as much as he could, as often as he could. During spring training in Florida, Clemente suggested that Sangy not go to the racetrack and bet the horses with teammates. Sangy wasn't sure how to spend his time in the unfamiliar city, so Clemente introduced him to ceramics. Yes, ceramics. And the two would craft and sculpt pottery on late winter afternoons when the preseason activities were over. And listeners, I may not be doing their friendship justice. Suffice to say that Manny Sanguian looked up to Roberto Clemente, and Clemente was very proud to be a support and friend to his younger teammate. Sanguian gave Clemente full credit for his success as an athlete, saying, quote, "God sent Clemente so people would realize that Latinos were talented." Now, let's talk about the 1971 season. At 36 years of age, Clemente would lead the Pirates, a team that included future Hall of Famer Willie Stargell and Al Oliver, Gene Kleins, and Richie Zisk. We can't forget Roberto's now best friend, catcher Manny Sanguian. On the mound, they had outspoken pitcher Doc Ellis, as well as Steve Blass and Dave Gustee. You may know Doc Ellis as the player who supposedly pitched a no-hitter while under the influence of LSD, but that's a story for another episode. In 1971, the Pirates would finish the season 97-65, 7 games ahead of second-place St. Louis in the National League East. And the 1971 National League Championship, it was a best-of-5 series that set the East Division champion Pirates against the West Division champion San Francisco Giants. The Giants were led by future Hall of Famers Willie McCovey and Juan Marichal. The team also included outfielder Bobby Bonds and a 40-year-old Willie Mays. The Giants won 90 games in the 1971 season, which lifted them over their rivals, the Los Angeles Dodgers, by just 1 game. Despite the Giants' strong lineup, the Pirates defeated San Francisco 3-1 to advance to the World Series. Once again, in the World Series, the Pirates are the underdogs. They are facing the defending world champions, the Baltimore Orioles. And the Orioles had a strong lineup that featured future Hall of Famers Frank Robinson, Brooks Robinson, and slugging first baseman Boog Powell. The Orioles' real strength was its pitching staff that included the likes of Mike Seller, Dave McAnally, and future Hall of Famer Jim Palmer. The Orioles had won the 1970 World Series by defeating the Cincinnati Reds 4-1. In 1971, the Orioles won 101 games, far outpacing the second-place Detroit Tigers in the American League East. The Orioles would defeat the American League West champion, Oakland A's, 3-0 in the 1971 ALCS. But friends, don't feel too badly for the A's, because they're going to go on to win 3 straight World Series championships in 72, 73, and 74. Underdogs once again in the World Series, the Pirates weren't worried. They didn't mind taking on the heavily favored Baltimore Orioles. The 1971 matchup was a repeat of the 1960 World Series because it went the whole 7 games. And once again, the Pirates secured the series, winning the 7th and final game, 2-1, in Baltimore. For his part, Roberto hit safely in all 7 games, duplicating a feat he had performed in 1960. And for the series, Roberto batted .414 with 2 home runs and 4 RBIs. Because of his strong performance in what would be his final World Series appearance, Roberto Clemente became the first Spanish-speaking ballplayer to earn the World Series MVP award. In his career, Roberto Clemente compiled 12 gold gloves, 12 All-Star selections, 4 batting titles, 2 World Series titles, a World Series MVP, and a Babe Ruth Award. Clemente finished his career in 1972 with exactly 3,000 hits. He was only the 11th player in Major League history to reach that milestone. His final hit was a double off Pennsylvania native John Matlack of the New York Mets on September 30, 1972. The Cincinnati Reds would knock the Pirates out of playoff contention. This freed up Clemente to manage the Puerto Rican All-Star baseball team as they played in the Amateur Baseball World Series, a series that led them to the Central American nation of Nicaragua, where they played in the capital city of Managua. On December 23, 1972, a 6.5 magnitude earthquake hit the capital city of Nicaragua, killing approximately 5,000 people and leaving hundreds of thousands of people homeless. The quake also destroyed 2 of the city's 3 hospitals. The people of Managua were suffering. Clemente, who was known to be a generous person, he reflected on the time he'd recently spent there and felt it was important for him to offer aid to the community. First, he financed and coordinated the delivery of materials to Managua, but what he learned, much to his frustration, was that profiteers were helping themselves to the items and selling them back to the struggling populace. Clemente decided to take matters into his own hands. He would take the aid directly from Puerto Rico to Nicaragua and make sure things got to the people who needed it most. Vera, his wife, intervened. She did not want him traveling to Central America. She told him she had a bad feeling about it, and he reassured her that it would be fine and continued his planning. Clemente started by chartering a cargo plane, a DC-7 owned and operated by a man named Arthur Rivera. What Clemente did not know is that the plane was in poor condition. Not only was it an older model, but it had recently crashed, skidding off the runway into a ditch. This happened after a hydraulics unit failed, and the repairs done after the December 2nd, 1972 incident were not what you and I might think of as up to code. The crash damaged the landing gear and bent two of the propellers. When he looked at the plane, Clemente saw a freshly painted aircraft and an owner interested in helping. The $4,000, about $22,000 in today's money, that Clemente would pay him after the successful trip, well, that didn't hurt either. The delivery of aid materials was planned for New Year's Eve, 1972. While the Clemente family had plans for the evening, entertaining guests at their home, Roberto felt the charitable work was more important and the people of Nicaragua should not wait. His wife would host the party in his absence. And one more thing about the plane that he's chartered from Arthur Rivera. In 1971, the FAA temporarily revoked Rivera's pilot license for 66 violations, including using a large aircraft for the transportation of persons or property for compensation or hire without certification. 66 violations. As plans to make the delivery progressed, Rivera hired a pilot, a man named Jerry Hill. Rivera decided to cost-cut again and named himself co-pilot, even though he was not certified to fly the plane. He didn't hire a flight engineer either. It would be Hill, Rivera, and Clemente on board, along with a couple of helpers and all the supplies they could carry. Because the trip was planned for New Year's Eve and it would be a nighttime flight, Clemente told his friend, Tom Walker, who had spent days helping Clemente load planes with relief materials, that he should not travel with them on New Year's Eve. He wanted Walker, a single man in his early 20s, to enjoy the holiday and relax. This was the last time the two friends would speak. It was after 9 p.m. on New Year's Eve, 1972, when Clemente, plane owner Arthur Rivera, pilot Jerry Hill, and two maintenance workers, Francisco Matias and Angel Lozano, boarded the plane for the 1,400-mile trip. As Clemente prepared to board, one of the airport workers stopped him and said that the plane looked overloaded. And the worker was right. According to Wikipedia, at its takeoff weight, the aircraft was 3%, which doesn't sound like much, but then you realize that's more than 4,000 pounds over the maximum takeoff weight for a DC-7. The plane began down the runway at 9:11 p.m., and the sounds of engine failure could be heard as they taxied. The plane did lift off, but the pilot radioed that he was coming back around. Now, weather and visibility were good, but the overloaded plane did not make it back to the airport. The plane crashed into the ocean a mile and a half from shore. The water where the plane went down was about 80 feet deep. Rescue teams were dispatched immediately to search for survivors. The darkness impeded their efforts. Two Coast Guard helicopters and at least two patrol boats searched the area for hours after the crash, but they were not able to locate anyone from the plane. While the remains of the pilot would be recovered, the others were never found. Searchers were diving in rough waters for days after the wreck, hoping to recover the remains of the four missing men. One of the divers, who had never done any diving before that week, was Clemente's friend and teammate, Manny Sanguian. Sangi quickly learned the ins and outs of diving and spent hours each day in the water with an oxygen tank on his back, searching fruitlessly for his friend and mentor. When the crash was investigated, it was found that Engine 2 failed and there was a loss of power to Engine 3. The aircraft was not properly maintained or inspected, and the engineer and co-pilot were not qualified for that plane. Rivera had stuck one of the maintenance guys in the engineer seat. They also noted previous damage to the craft that was not properly repaired. As news spread, Puerto Rico and baseball fans everywhere mourned the loss of 38-year-old Roberto Clemente. When reflecting on how his death impacted Puerto Rico, one man dubbed it, "The Day Happiness Died." The nation marked 3 days of mourning for his passing. So great was the loss felt by the community. Meanwhile, in Pittsburgh, phones rang constantly at local newspapers and TV stations, people calling to confirm that it was true that Clemente was gone. On January 4th, 1973, a memorial was held at Iglesia San Fernando in Carolina, Puerto Rico, to honor the life of Roberto Clemente. Among the attendees from the Pirates organization were pitcher Steve Blass, who gave the eulogy, and Pirates general manager Joe Brown. Notably absent was Manny Sanguia. He was still in the water, diving and searching unsuccessfully for the remains of his friend. Just 3 months after his death, Roberto Clemente was voted into the Baseball Hall of Fame. This was a series of firsts, because they waived the mandatory 5-year waiting period, and he was the first Puerto Rican and Latino inducted. Clemente received 393 of 420 available votes. Clemente is still believed by many to be the best right fielder to ever play the game. Now, in 2020, almost 50 years after his death, there is talk of retiring his number 21 from the league, much the way that Jackie Robinson's number was retired. The Dead Ball Podcast is created by Tim Scott. This week's episode was written by me, Nina Instead, and researched by Haley Gray and Tim Scott. Chuck Walters is our technical consultant and audio editor. If you're enjoying the podcast, please take a moment to leave a rating or a review on your favorite podcatcher. This helps other baseball lovers find the show and the stories shared here. To learn more about Deadball, or to talk with like-minded baseball fans, join the Deadball discussion group on Facebook.